He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitzjulian, council producer extraordinaire. That's on his business card. Windy City intern.
Good to have you here, Julian.
Fresh off of wisdom teeth removal. Everybody be sure you get at Windy City intern and tell her to get well soon. And any chipmunk pictures, gift gifts you can send. Any chipmunk gift gifts.
Have you done the wisdom teeth thing?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I did too.
It was brutal. I don't even want to talk about it on air because I don't want to scare people.
I got really lucky. I was like eating a donut on the way home.
Yeah.
I got really lucky.
My mom was not a fan of anesthesia or,
oh my
or,
God, are you kidding
putting
me?
You under. Like, she didn't believe in that, so they just used local shots. And it was a
so
very,
you were awake the whole time?
And it was a very complicated procedure. Yes.
Oh, my God.
She did not feel that the
I feel like that's child abuse.
She did not feel risk-reward that putting me under made sense for something as simple as wisdom teeth.
I woke up and thought it had just started.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I, like, lost it. I was like, 17 years old, and I lost it. I was like, no, stop, I'm awake. They're like, dude, it's over. I was like, oh, crap.
You're like, my bad. So send at Windy City intern all your chipmunk gift gifts, although she's not very chipmunked out. She looks like she's healing quite well, and we are glad that she has come in to hang out with us to do such
local
great
local anesthesia. Good
yeah,
Lord.
Yeah, it's fantastic. My mom. So speaking of people we blame. Don't
our mothers?
Yeah. Well, no, not
our
you,
moms.
Just me. Your mom is fantastic. But don't blame Canada for the sports. You like that? That was a little South Park reference.
Oh,
for
I got it.
There.
No,
don't blame Canada for the issues with sports right now. Blame yourselves. And
interesting.
We can all just look in the mirror at this one. And I'm as guilty as anybody. We can all blame each other, because the fact is, if we don't really like something about sports, we are the only people that can control it. We are the only people, because what's funny in this is everybody blames millionaire athletes for making millions of dollars. And then now there are finally people waking up and blaming billionaire owners for making billions of dollars. And at no point is anyone saying, oh, my God, you know what? They wouldn't be millionaires and billionaires if I wasn't funding their business. This is like if every time you if you like to go shop at Old Navy, but every time you're walking into Old Navy, you're like, oh, I don't like Old Navy. Then why are you spending their money there? I happen to love Old Navy, by the way. I think that in the process of the NBA, if you don't like these guys getting paid, stop going to games. If you don't like the length of the regular season, stop watching it. If you don't like how much football players get paid, stop buying jerseys. Like, at some point, you got to decide you're not going to give them your eyeballs or your cash. That's the only thing that changes the system.
No, we speak with our eyes and our time and our dollars. I mean, that's how that's our power as fans. And it's the same. It's always the same thing. And this is probably not a smart thing to say, and I got from a guy who has a radio show. But if you don't like our show, don't tell us you don't like the show. It's like you have the power to turn the channel. Like that. That's if you don't like a TV show, don't watch it. Like that's like
right.
It doesn't make sense to me. Like if you think XYZ commentator on a TV show, I don't know what I could possibly be referring to. If you didn't like a show in the mornings, let's say, that happens to be about arguing about stuff, and you don't like that show, don't watch it. Turn the channel. Like that's your power as a consumer. What did we say about NBC when we didn't like the Mike Milbury comments about PK Subban? It was respectfully email NBC if you'd like to and say, you know what, and then turn it off. Don't watch it. That's your power. You take money away from sponsorship if enough people tune out. And that's why you're seeing, you know, like there's some heavy hitters in the media that have been fired, not because they were bad people and said bad things, but because advertisers pulled out. Sponsors said, we don't want to be a part of that. So sponsorship dollars is where we have our power as consumers. And I agree. But now I will say this. I don't think, to sort of back up the conversation a little bit, I don't think the NFL is broken. I think the NFL is
just fine.
I think the Patriots, actually, if you were to ask me, hey, what's the right amount of dynasty? Like every 4 years the same team wins, I'm okay. That's 3 out of 4 somebody else is winning. I'm okay with what the Patriots have done. Am I ready for Tom Brady to retire? Yes, I'm ready for him to retire. I'm ready for the next generation of quarterbacks to take over, whether that's Derek Carr, Jameis Winston, you know, Mariota, whatever. That's just sort of okay, it's been here for 20 years and you're 39, like enough, dude. Like it's time for someone else to take over. But I don't think it's broken. I don't think college football is broken. I think it's consolidated, and I think that's a have and have not conversation, a Power 5 conversation. Even within the Power 5, it's basically just the top 15 or 20 every year that have won every championship for the last 50 years, if you really look back at a history book. It, basically, since the scholarship limitations of the late 70s, you get to 85 scholarships. Since that moment, we've basically had 15 to 20 programs win every championship, which is why I think it's fun to see new blood crop up, Oregon crop up, or Michigan State crop up, or some of these other programs kind of get good. So I think college football is fine. But the ratings for all the other sports, you know, they're all doing well. So it's hard to – like, while I don't watch regular season NBA basketball, I think the tournament, the NCAA tournament's fine.
I think
– regular season's not watched, but the tournament's great.
To me, when you talk about the NFL and college football, I think part of the reason they're not broken, because the conversation is the SEC broken, is far different than the conversation of is college football broken. It the best comparison I could make is if you're a mega NFL nut, and these don't exist, but to this level, if you're looking at it and saying, you know what, the AFC East is broken because the Patriots win the division every stinking year. That's sort of what Alabama is. The reason the system overall isn't broken, you mentioned the Patriots in the NFL. The fact is, Tom Brady has given us epic Super Bowl ending wins. We've seen sort of memorable losses in the process. I think in that sense, Clemson winning, and I said it last year, for all of the Clemson fans that that still hate me.
Oh, the irony of this.
And the number of Clemson fans that came at me that night, I laughed about it because I sat there on every radio station I could and said, the best solution, the best thing for college football here is a Clemson championship. I think that's, you look at the bigger picture, the number of times that the Patriots have been close or not won, or the number of times the Patriots have been challenged, and the number of times Bama has been challenged. I think that that's sort of, those moments are fantastic. To have, you know, things like a kick six a few years ago sort of derail a process is it's an amazing thing because it creates a memory for an entire generation, and it's against the Darth Vader in the
equation. And that is sort of the risk you run of, hey, is a dynasty good for a sport, right? Like, the risk you run with that question is it takes something spectacular to beat them. Now, in the NFL, I don't think that's the case. I think it will take something special to beat Golden State. Like, in the NBA, it's going to take LeBron James, the greatest player of our generation, to beat Golden State, probably. And even then, he's, what, 1-2? Against them? So, like it takes Deshaun Watson to beat Alabama, or a kick six to beat Alabama, or Tim Tebow to beat Alabama, or Urban Meyer and a possessed Cardell Jones to beat Alabama. So, like, you can do it, but the risk of that is that you need something special. But then when you get it, it is that moment that, like is it, and anyone forget where they were when they watched the kick six? Like, I know exactly where I was. I know where I was sitting. I know the room I was in. I will never forget that moment. I have no dog in the hunt. I don't care one way or the other if Alabama or Auburn wins the game. Do not care one bit, but I know exactly where I was because that was a spectacular moment in college sports history. I know exactly where I was when, I mean, I was in the building, I get it, but like everybody knows where they were when Ohio State beat Alabama. When Deshaun Watson made that pass to Hunter Renfro, we all know, like, Russell Wilson's interception in the Super Bowl. Like, we all know where we were when we saw those moments, and it takes those special moments to knock off dynasties. So I don't think it happens as much in basketball because it's a 7-game series and there's less randomness to it. It's more like the best team just wins, and maybe we can have that discussion. But ironically, baseball and hockey are the two best postseasons from a predictability standpoint, and the NCAA tournament, and those regular seasons are like the three least watched regular seasons.
Yeah, that
college
is
basketball, baseball, and hockey.
That is an interesting process because I think more often than not, those give you your interesting postseasons, and in the NBA, more often than not, 7-game separates winner from loser. I think the same would hold true in the NFL. I mean, the fact is, if you made the Falcons and the Patriots play a best-of-7 series, they're not going to look like that. You know, it's
the best team would win.
Right. The best team plays out and wins. And this is where Julian and I always differ, because Julian wants the best team to win. I want the most exciting outcome, you know. So
can it change from sport to sport?
Yeah, I think it can. I think it can.
Like, is it okay to say, hey, in college football, I want it to be the best two teams playing in the championship game? And in the NFL to say, I want to see who gets hot. Like, is it okay to feel differently?
Yeah,
about-
I think everybody's different on that. Like, I want, in football in general, I want the most exciting, oh my God, Betty, don't say that moment. Like, that's what I'm looking for.
It takes a lot to get Betty excited these
days.
Well,
yeah, Betty.
She's getting older.
Well, she's still listening to hotcakes and pot pie over there. That's a Betty's totally checked out on. No.
So, like, for college basketball, you know, I think it's, what makes the beauty of the NCAA tournament is sort of the randomness of it and how unpredictable it is. But at the end of the day, you still normally get a powerhouse program playing against a pretty big program in the championship game. I mean, very rarely do you get Butler. I mean, a couple of times we've seen Butler in the final championship game. Otherwise, it's the same sort of thing as college football. Now, there are more teams in college basketball that are capable. Villanova is a team that would never have a chance in football, but is obviously very capable in basketball. So I don't – you know, in the NBA, I think people want the best playing the best. I don't think they want, like, we talked about it in the moment. What would have happened if Boston and San Antonio had played in a Stanley Cup? That'd be really weird. If Boston and San Antonio played in the NBA Finals, the ratings would have gone.
Those guys look like on skates.
They probably would be great if they did it the way the hockey players do from the time they're 3 years old. I think though, like we talked about it, if San Antonio and Boston had played in the finals, what would the ratings have been like? And it's the opposite in the NHL. The ratings were higher because Nashville was like this improbable 8 seed. Now, there's lots of other stories attached to that, but it's the opposite. It wasn't the Blackhawks and Penguins. It wasn't the 1-1. In fact, neither one of them was the 1 seed. So it's very strange from sport to sport. It even differs.
Well, and the interesting part of why college football isn't broken has to do with the fact that we even have a conversation about which conference is best. One of the biggest names in all of college football spoke out about it yesterday, said something a lot of you guys are going to disagree with. You'll hear that next. We'll react to that next. But you can't disagree with one thing. Xfinity, it's where you need to go for your Wi-Fi experience. So everybody knows that AT&T's got Wi-Fi, but I'm telling you, they can't keep up with the speed. Xfinity offers more speed to more homes than AT&T does. Plus, Xfinity has fast in-home Wi-Fi speeds in every room of your house. So Sonny can be in one room doing one thing, I can be downloading and uploading sessions in another room, and our speed never suffers. Plus, now you can ask about Xfinity Mobile, a new kind of network designed to save you money. You get up to 5 lines of talk and text included with Xfinity Internet service with no activation fees, no line access fees, plus 2 easy data options available so you can stream entertainment on the go and save along the way. Go ahead and compare that to AT&T and tell me what you think. I got an offer that ends July 31st. Requires enrollment into EcoBill, paperless billing, and auto-pay. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. New customers only. Equipment, taxes, fees, including broadcast TV fees, RSN fees, extra subject to change. After promo, regular rates apply. Free installation, limited standard installation on one outlet. Non-standard installation, equipment, taxes, fees, extra Wi-Fi claim based on Xfinity Gigabyte service. Router coverage and speed on a 5 gigahertz band. Severe weather, heavy rain, or snow may interfere with satellite signal, causing the picture to freeze or pixelate. Here's what you need to do. Hurry up and make the switch to Xfinity Internet for as low as $19.99 per month for 12 months and ask how to get even more speed with Blast Internet. Now with speeds up to 75 megabytes, Xfinity Internet, perfect for everyone. So be sure to call 1-800-XFINITY or visit Xfinity.com and make the switch to Xfinity Internet today. When we come back, one of the biggest coaches in all of college football praising his world, throwing a little shade on yours. We'll tell you what it was. We'll do that next. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Julian Council crushing it back there. Don't forget to send get well notes to at Windy City intern recovering from her wisdom teeth removal. So, SEC Media Days wrapping up on the one hand. ACC Media Days ramping up on the other.
Kickoff.
No surprise, by the way, on the timing on that.
Yeah.
No surprise by that at all. Well done, ACC.
So as one wraps up, the other one kicks off. And here you have Jimbo Fisher. And it's funny because we have been hearing and will continue to hear Jimbo Fisher as like, he's the side cough after Nick Saban right now for a lot of people. So everybody's like, Nick Saban, Jimbo Fisher. Like, people are trying to put him in the same conversation. It's happening where it's like, hey, because everybody's desperate to find the next Nick Saban, that's Jimbo Fisher's getting more and more and more love nationally.
He's one of the two or three names.
Right. So it's the momentum around him continues to build. And let's face it, Florida State's going to be just ridiculously good this year. So he comes in yesterday and says something that I'm not surprised by. I understand why, but it's something that you need to hear because it's going to make most of you laugh. This is Jimbo Fisher.
I coached the SEC for 13. I think it's a tremendous conference. I think the Big Ten's a tremendous conference. I think they all are. But I think right now, with what we've accomplished in the last 5 years, you're talking about major wins, big wins, national championships, Heisman Trophy winners, coaches, everything that goes involved, I think the ACC is as good a league as there is in football.
I have no problem with that. I think that I think it's good, but it's being construed into the ACC-SEC conversation that you know that I hate. But it becomes this, which conference is better? To you, when you hear this, is this just a sales pitch to recruits? Is he being calculated and trying to get that message out? Or do you think that there's a valid argument that over a 5-year period of time, not just today, because that's been part of our discussion over the last 5 years, when you consider big wins, Heisman Trophy winners, and you consider the level of play, that we're as good as anybody? Is that true?
You know, there's a lot of truth to that. And I think the rapid, I don't know how to say this, it's stabilized so quickly in the ACC. And a lot of things go into that from a financial standpoint. The, you know, locking in your teams, bringing in Notre Dame was a huge coup for the league. They are doing all of the things you need to sort of elevate yourself to another level. Now, I think I'm with you. I think the which league is best argument doesn't really serve any purpose, other than maybe like if the committee's sitting in a room at the end of the year and they have to judge strength of schedule, maybe that then it comes into play. Like, oh, I think Wisconsin played a lighter schedule than Clemson, and who played a tougher schedule than Bama or whatever. That may come into play, but otherwise it serves no purpose. It's mostly just regional pride that's on the line. But I do think what's good for college football is for all of the leagues to get closer together, for all of the power leagues to be sort of more balanced and to have, you know, less SEC at the top. I think that's a good thing for college football. I think the Big 12 is falling farther and farther behind, and I think the ACC has moved the fastest upward, if you're talking about upward mobility. And Jimbo obviously is referring to his own Heisman Trophy and national championship in 2013, where they beat an SEC team. Dabo and Deshaun Watson, who probably should have won the Heisman Trophy last year, it still went to an ACC quarterback, so either way, it's in the league. And they knock off an SEC team, the big bad Darth Vader, you know, evil empire, Nick Saban, in the national championship game. And the coaching right now, the one thing that I think sets apart the ACC from other leagues is the depth of coaching. That's where they have made major strides. Dino Babers is a really interesting, good coach, and he's coaching at a really, right now, awful program at Syracuse. They're going to be a ton of fun to watch. They're going to score a boatload of points, but they're a 3-9, 4-8 maybe type of team. So I think the coaching in the ACC has gotten so much better. I think that's where they have made major, major strides on the rest of America. And, oh, by the way, it's starting to show up because their record in big bowl games, which, again, I don't like, but BCS bowls was so awful for the first 15 years of the BCS era, it has swung back to being really, really good. And that's because of, almost entirely, Jimbo Fisher and Dabo Swinney. Those two took over, and they have won 8 consecutive Atlantic divisions. They've won 6 consecutive ACC titles. So what the ACC needs to continue this rise to be what Jimbo Fisher's talking about, it needs the middle of the league to get better. And that's what they tried to do with Mark Richt at Miami, with Justin Fuente at Virginia Tech. They want NC State wants to be better. North Carolina deserves to be better. They've had a really good season, the best season in school history, basically 2 years ago. They have a lot of middle teams. Pittsburgh could be good. Georgia Tech could be good. So as long as these middle-of-the-pack teams continue to get better, then I think that the ACC is on a really, really big positive trajectory. Do they have better players than the SEC? No. Do they have better teams? I have no idea.
You mentioned Justin Fuente, and I think that that's somebody a lot of people think is going to have a bright future at Virginia Tech. I think there's some interesting coaching there, and I'm going to ask you a question that, and I'll challenge you to kind of think on the spot here because we didn't discuss this, all right? But okay. Earlier we were discussing Butch Jones and where he would lie in the SEC. Well, the question becomes if Butch Jones were a coach in the – we always talk about, if his team was in the ACC.
Yikes.
If Butch Jones was a coach in the ACC, where would he rank?
I think it's who would you trade? Like, same question.
That's fine.
If you could trade and feel like you're automatically getting better, like there's no risk involved.
Right, and we'll take the top two out. We'll take
Jimbo, Mark Richt, Justin Fuente, now I've got to think. Bobby Petrino for sure, better coach than Butch Jones, not even close. Not Dave Dorn at NC State. I'm not taking David Cutcliffe's a better coach. I don't know if David Cutcliffe would do better at Tennessee. I think there's certain people that fit at certain positions. David Cutcliffe is a better coach than Butch Jones, but I don't think David Cutcliffe is suited for high level, big time, elite level college football. Pat Narduzzi at Pittsburgh, still an unknown. Paul Johnson has been almost fired multiple times.
I'd love to see Pat.
But he's good.
I'd love to see Pat here just to see if he loses his mind. Like, just to see if there is that moment. Because I'm pretty sure if there's any coach in college football that we're just going to literally see explode, like his head just poof, pops, like a cartoon, it's Pat Narduzzi.
Yeah, Larry Fedora is an interesting one. That's a pretty even match there. So you probably middle – 7th, 8th, 9th. I mean, there's probably 5 or 6 guys that I would trade instantaneously for Butch. I'm assuming Dave Clawson, no, at Wake Forest. I'm not doing that. I'm off the top of my head. Or Steve Adazio, at Boston College.
This is totally off the top of your head, but it serves to the point of the interesting balance between the two because it serves to the point, as you said, that the coaches are better, but the players are better in the SEC. And I don't think anybody can deny that right now, that the SEC as a whole just has better players. The interesting part of the ACC and why I think the ACC is going to continue to get so much love is it is two elite programs at the very top. And so this argument that it's Alabama and everybody else, even though it's almost that at times in the SEC, almost isn't the same.
Well, it's just Clemson and Florida State and everybody else.
Right.
But so, and that's where we need something new. Like
that's why to that point, the rise of Auburn, if Auburn can step up and be what some people think Auburn could be, for example, if Auburn turns into a top five, top eight program, that changes the discussion entirely. And it's stupid, but it's the way the world works, that if Alabama's one and the rest of the SEC all falls between 12 and 18, but you have some moment here where you've got Florida State and Clemson both in the top five, the conversation will be the ACC's better.
So let's project this out a little bit and sort of look at leagues and part of look at history at the same time. Part of the reason the SEC claimed all of the love that it claimed for a long period of time wasn't just that it won all the championships, was that five different programs won championships. No league even had more than two. The Big 12 was the only league, and the Big 12 had Texas and Oklahoma both win a championship during the BCS era. The ACC just added its second one. Like, the ACC's national title list is Florida State, and that's it, since 1980. And Clemson just became the second team to win a national title. The Big 10 had Michigan in 97, and then only Ohio State. The Pac-12 has only had USC. Oregon has been to a couple of them, but hasn't won one. So the difference during that run, why the SEC was viewed as so much better, was that five different programs at the top of the league were good. The ACC now has two. They need a third. They need Miami to get back. They need Louisville to take another step. The Big Ten has the look of that right now. Penn State, Michigan, and Ohio State look like they're all going to be trending into their sort of their best level of football. And that's why I think the Big Ten at the top is viewed so strongly. Now, the bottom half of the Big Ten is awful. And their coaches are questionable, too. But at the top, they have three stud coaches at three stud programs with three really good football teams this year. So I think that's where the Big Ten has made up some ground, is they've got three elite programs. And if I'm guaranteeing you right now, Michigan wins a national title next year. And if Michigan does that next year, that will be two teams in the Big Ten, just like the ACC, two separate programs in a five-year window that will have won a national title. And that's when you start to see growth from a league.
Well, and if there's anything we've learned about society as a whole, history doesn't seem to exist if it's more than 3 or 4 years old. So that's not just about sports. That's in general. David Hale, ESPN ACC reporter, going to join us up next. We'll get his thoughts on the comments and his thoughts on the conference. We'll do that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Julian Council producing. It's Braden and Fitz on ESPN, 102.5 The Game. And even when you think it's a slow day in sports, it's not a slow day in sports. Why? A, I don't think slow days exist anymore in this industry. B, you got coaches talking. And anytime a coach talks.
Talking season, baby.
Anytime a coach speaks, and it's not just coach speak, it makes the world explode. So for all of you guys out there that are driving around, and this was the reaction. I know this is the reaction. You hear Jimbo Fisher say the ACC is as good as anybody, and the headline grabbed is ACC best conference in college football, and a lot of you guys driving around go, "Dude, what?" And I know that. So we figured we get a little insight on all of it from somebody that's right in the thick of all of it. David Hale covers the ACC for ESPN. David, man, we appreciate your time this morning.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So come out of the gate, in your mind, is the ACC the best conference in college football?
Well, I mean, it depends on what parameters you want to use. If your window of discussion is the 2016 season, then yes, it was the best conference in college football last year. They had the Heisman winner, the Heisman runner-up, the national champion. They won 9 postseason games. You know, there's a litany of statistics that would show it was the best league in college football last year. Then they waved goodbye to Mike Williams and Deshaun Watson and Mitch Trubisky and Brad Kaya and a handful of other very talented guys, particularly the quarterback position. And this year, I don't know that there is the case that you can make that the ACC is going to be the best conference again. I think, you know, and Jimbo himself will say this if you talk to him about it, that the SEC is the best conference in college football over the long term. They've earned that. But that doesn't mean that on any given year that's going to be the case. It used to be the case where I think there was the SEC and then way down the list was everyone else. I don't think that's true anymore. The ACC has gotten better. It has closed that gap. in a long-term scenario. But in the short term, there's still more talented players in the SEC than there is in the ACC. It's just not as many more talented players as it used to be.
I think that's the important thing here for fans. Isn't, hey, which league is better? My league's better than your league. Other than the Big 12, which is struggling right now and doesn't necessarily have a bright future, you look around and every other of the four major leagues have gotten closer and closer together. That's good for the sport, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think, and it's funny, you know, I talked to Jimbo about this at some length yesterday, and one of the things that he was bringing up, and I've kind of referred to it as the Yankees-Red Sox theory, but having Clemson and Florida State at the top of the ACC has kind of forced the rest of the league up. And I think that's what you need in every conference, is sort of those two guys, the heavyweights that are taking swings at each other throughout an entire season, throughout an entire offseason, that sort of are setting the bar. And for so long, the SEC had that in spades, and I think that helped. I think it's kind of hurt the SEC that it's been Alabama and then everyone else lately. But I think the more that you can have a Clemson-Florida State rivalry, but do that around the country, it makes everything better. It makes every other game more impactful when you have those two at the top that are really the heavyweights, that every year their game is probably the difference between going to the playoff and not going to the playoff. And I think it's, you know, it's, I'm not a advocate for parity in college football, because I think, you know, to some extent that waters down the game. I like having great teams, but the beauty of college football is you can have 10 great teams or 10 very, very good teams and still have, you know, a high number of teams that are entertaining to watch on a week in and week out basis that are probably not championship contenders. And I think that's essentially how the ACC has found itself set up, is you've got two teams that every year are going to be in that conversation. And now you have four, five, six teams that on, you know, one out of every 3 or 4 years can be in that conversation too. That's the ideal setup that you want for a league. And I think that's where the ACC is right now.
We're talking to David Hale, ESPN ACC reporter on Braden and Fitz. Let me ask you, you just mentioned talking to Jimbo Fisher, and I feel like every SEC team tries to talk to Jimbo Fisher every time there's a job opening. Do you think we finally reached a point where maybe that stops and we realize that he's set where he is?
Yeah, I think, look, I mean, the ultimate wild card is what happens when Nick Saban decides he's hanging it up, because Alabama is its own animal, and I think you can never say never about Alabama. But I think other than that, when you've turned down opportunities to move forward in conversations or take jobs or whatever with LSU, with Texas, you're not saying yes to anybody if you're saying no to them. And I think that's exactly right. Look, what I've always said about Jimbo is he's a lot like Saban in that it's not so much about the salary, though he makes very good money, and it's not so much about the winning, though he's certainly done a lot of it. It's about having control of your program. It's about being the ultimate arbiter of every decision that is going to get made within your program. And it's taken him a long time to make Florida State what he wanted it to be. But he has that power at Florida State. And you take any coach, Saban, and put him in some situations like LSU or Texas, and it's impossible to have that. There's just too many cooks in the kitchen throughout the program. And I don't mean just in terms of recruiting or how you're running the day-to-day of football. It's top down from the president of the university on down. Jimbo has absolute control of what he wants his program to be and how everyone who influences that program is going to influence it. He's not walking away from that unless he is guaranteed of getting the same thing somewhere else in a better situation. And I don't know where that would occur.
A big part, David Hale joining us here, a big part of why the ACC has gotten so much better is great coaches. And you now appear to have one at Louisville and Bobby Petrino. You got one at Mark Richt at Miami, Justin Fuente at Virginia Tech. You've got good quality coaches. Those three programs all look like they could challenge this year. But we do have six consecutive years of Clemson v. Florida State. Is there another challenger in this particular calendar year in the ACC, or is it still just going to be Florida State at Clemson on November 11th?
I would say it's still that game, but, you know, I think Louisville fans certainly rightfully say, look, we've got a magical player in Lamar Jackson, and there's no reason we can't contend. I think NC State fans would say, look, we were two plays away from beating Clemson and Florida State last year. Why can't we do it again this year? I think Miami fans, I've talked to a lot of them who say, yeah, we're probably going to lose to Florida State in September, but then we're going to make the ACC championship game and we'll beat them there. We're going to finish 12-1 and we're going to go, you know, I don't know that any of this stuff is true, but I do see the validity in some of these arguments. I think Miami has a chance to be very, very good this year. That defense is going to be potentially, I think, a top five defense in the nation this year. I think the big question is whether they are going to have the quarterback play that allows them to win games when they need to put up, you know, more than 24 points to pull off a W. Again, you look at a team like NC State, and certainly the history isn't there to suggest it, but their defensive line is NFL caliber, six players deep, and have a really interesting offense and guys that really match up and are tough matchups for defenses. I think this year the ACC has some depth to it that should make the league more interesting. I think if you're John Swofford and you're the commissioner, your worry is that depth means that both Clemson and Florida State are going to finish with a couple of losses and you get squeezed out of a playoff berth.
David, let me ask you then, what's the best situation for the ACC? Is it better for them to have a strong Florida State or Clemson team go into the playoff as the champion, or better for them to get an unexpected third team in there as a champion?
I think you're always better off having that obvious big name playoff team. I mean, that's what they want. It will keep interest in the league. I think, you know, if they can have that game between Clemson and Florida State be essentially a de facto playoff game in November, that's the ideal scenario for the ACC this year. But I do think in the long term,
what if that team's Miami?
Yeah, well, that's what I think. In the long term, having Miami as a routine player again, I think, is huge for the league. I mean, I think it changes the perception of the league as a whole. It changes the perception of, I mean, right now you have Florida State and Clemson playing in the same side of the same division of the ACC, and the Coastal is kind of laughed off as like the JV for the ACC. I think having a functional Miami and Virginia Tech team where they are competing like that on a routine basis, it matters a lot. And it certainly, if you look at what Mark Richt's done there, they're not far from that. And the recruiting class that they're putting together for next year is incredibly impressive. There's energy and momentum surrounding Miami now that there has not been in a long, long time. Now, I don't know if that translates this year to the personnel being good enough that they can compete at Florida State Clemson level, but they're not far off now and they're trending in the right direction.
Read them on ESPN.com. Follow them on Twitter at David Hale ESPN. David, we appreciate your time this morning. Great stuff. Thanks, man.
Thanks. Take care.
So, Braden, David just gave us a bunch of scenarios that are ideal, and it raised, you know, he answered the same question we asked at SEC Media Days. What's best for the SEC? What's best for the ACC? We're all trying to figure that out. But he also just talked about what he thinks is best and how the best ideal conference can be made up. I want to get your thoughts on that and how the perfect conference could be structured. We'll do that. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Not only are you listening to Braden and Fitz, you're listening to us live from the Game Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. and Mount Juliet. Julian Council on fire today with the song selection. It's like he stole my Spotify playlist or something. It's amazing.
I'm not sure I recognized one yet. Now, although, there was some Moon Taxi in there. New album coming soon, by the way.
I am a fantastic, by the way, we'll get to the ACC in just a second. My Friday tradition, and maybe part of the reason I'm in such a good mood when I come in, Spotify releases this massive list every Friday that's New Music Friday.
Very cool.
And it's just a collection of artists from all genres. And so what I did is I created a playlist that's on my phone that's just called A. And that's so it's at the top of my playlist.
Okay.
And so that I can just, while I'm driving, because I don't want to use like my hands and not pay attention, I can just click it twice and it puts it in that playlist for me.
A playlist.
Yeah, so it's just A. So then when I'm sitting around the house, I just pull up A. And that's my way of trying to stay current on everything coming out. I've got like 120 songs that have come out in the last few months that are all on that playlist. And it's like, all right.
Where does one have the time for all of that? Julian, senior Wimbledon correspondent, can you give us an update on earmuffs, by the way, for everybody that's recording the men's semifinal? Is that correct?
Yeah, it's the gentlemen's semifinal.
Excuse me.
Championship at Wimbledon. American 24th ranked in this tournament. Sam Querrey
and Marin Cilic of Croatia, seventh ranked in the tournament, are in a tiebreaker in the first set. Cilic is now up 2-1. Ooh. Must win the tiebreaker 7-6, like 7-5 or whatever, by 2 points.
Yeah, it's very complicated.
At the risk of offending Cilic's family, should he be listening, he is a very unattractive person. Like, I mean, just – well, they're
his fans are just – his fans are not good looking either.
They are
I'm just
both
take
funny
it
looking.
Level.
Like, there's a lot of funny looking action.
Yeah, there's some silly looking
guys. They're
dudes.
Doofy looking guys.
Like, yeah, there's no question.
I sit next to Jordan Rodgers, and I'm like, I get it. I understand.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
I understand. I just want to touch the hair and be like, yeah. You, sir, are a golden god. I look at this, and I'm like,
I am a golden god.
So tell me about the ACC.
Well, a couple more points I'd like to make, actually, pro ACC, that I haven't heard points made. I haven't heard these points made yet as to why, if you were arguing, hey, ACC, we're the best, if I'm Jimbo Fisher, a couple of things that have not been made from a point standpoint. The fact that Virginia Tech and North Carolina, two sort of like second-tier programs but are pretty good programs, both battled Clemson very well in the ACC championship game, I think is a point that no one's made yet, that like Florida wasn't really close in the last 2 years. Missouri wasn't really close. The SEC championship game has been awful for basically 4 or 5 straight seasons, maybe even more than that. The fact that you have Virginia Tech taking Clemson to the wire, North Carolina taking Clemson to the wire in ACC championship setting makes for a great championship game, but it makes for better drama at the end of the year. And while you're John Swofford, the commissioner of the ACC, you want Clemson to win those games because then it gets you into the playoff, because if you lose, you might get knocked out or probably get knocked out. So you want a great game there, and it shows depth. It shows that North Carolina and Virginia Tech are two programs that, while not ACC championship programs yet, were good enough to compete at that level. The other one is what Clemson did to Ohio State. I think you could argue that's the biggest statement made by any team in any league last year, was a championship semifinal 31-0 destruction of Urban Meyer. That does not happen. And Urban Meyer doesn't take place against Ohio State. And Ohio State's going to be really good again this year. So I think that 31-0 destruction of Ohio State is a big statement on ACC Big Ten, even if you want to do that. That was a huge win for Dabo.
If we're looking at ACC championship games in the history that dates back to 2005, there's only really been a few blowouts. Duke, which was ranked 20th in the nation in 2013, got blown out by Jameis Winston, number one Florida State. They ended up winning. No, they lost in playoff, got embarrassed by Oregon. Let's see, 2011, Clemson, 38-10. Number 21, Clemson, over number 5, Virginia Tech, in that blowout. And then I guess we can call number 25, Virginia Tech, beating Boston College, who was ranked 18th, 30-12. Also,
is that the Matt Ryan team?
Yes.
Yeah.
And these are all, and for the ACC, for the most part, these have all been, every matchup has been like fairly highly rated teams playing each other.
And what's really interesting, and again, you could make both sides of the argument. If you're an SEC fan, you're going to argue one way. If you're an ACC fan, you're going to argue the other. That if Miami were to win the division this year, they would be the fifth different team to win that Coastal Division 5 years in a row. So you could argue, hey, that shows great depth. Or you could argue the other side of the coin, hey, they don't have any dominant teams. So, like, you can argue either way you want.
Sure.
I think it's good. I think as a fan of the game, I think it's fun to see different teams winning. I don't know if it's great for the ACC, but I think it's fun for the game. And I like that 5 different teams have won that division if Miami were to win
it
this
year. Let's say this, at least for the division, as much as people try to make that out as that case, if potentially Miami does that. Virginia Tech and Georgia Tech have been the 10 of the 12 and represented the Coastal.
Yep.
So you can say that all you want. Like, oh, they don't have a dominant team. But Virginia Tech and Georgia Tech, clearly, if you look at this, are dominating the Coastal.
Over 12-year span, right. And that's Frank Beamer being great and then Miami being down. But I think it's good.
Credit to Paul Johnson, please.
He's sort of like the Jim McElwain of the ACC. Like, for some reason, his fan base and boosters don't really like him all that much, but he's, like, pretty good. Then he has, like, a bad season and then a great season. Like, he's got a very strange relationship with his university as well.
I will say this. It all comes back to what's the best way to have your conference be, essentially. And the interesting part of this to me is I think there's real credence to having a conference where you know you got two teams that are just going to be top five powerhouses. And then 3 through 5 or 6 – on a rotation, it's a team that pops up and is really good because it still keeps it entertaining. I think that there's a point where, to Julian's question earlier of David Hale, what if Miami turns out to be the representative of the ACC this year? I think if you've got a third team that can pop up all the time, in a perfect SEC world this year, you know, if Auburn steps up and Bama is what Bama is expected to be, well, if whoever comes out of the East is really good, then all of a sudden it's like, man, and you mentioned earlier the conversation that we've all had about the Big Ten in general when you look at Ohio State and you look at Michigan and then a Penn State team that was better than people expected. So you look at it and you say, okay, if you can get that system where you've got two dominant teams and then 3, 4, and 5 are all – good teams that every couple of years cycle into being really good teams, I think that's a powerful conference.
Yeah, and I think that's a really interesting question. What is the ideal setup for a league? And if you're a fan or you're the commissioner, you might have different answers. Commissioner, you might want to be like, I really just want Bama and then a lot of teams that sell tickets. You know what I mean? Like, if you're a commissioner, you might think that because that gives you the best shot to win a national title every year. But I think there's something to be said about the two-headed monster and then depth. I think a large part of why the SEC got so much credit when it got all the credit it got was during that run is that it had five different programs were in different spots competing for national championships. And I think that's what really makes a league really, really dominant is if you've got 4 or 5 programs that are all capable of winning national titles on any given 2 or 3 year stretch of time. Penn State, Ohio State, and Michigan, I think we're entering, starting last year, maybe the year before, I think we're entering, as long as James Franklin, Jim Harbaugh, and Urban Meyer are at those three schools, those three programs should be great. Unfortunately, they're all in one side of the division. They're all in the same division, and they're never going to play in the championship game, which is unfortunate. It sucks. It is what it is. But I think we're entering a period of time where those three programs are going to dominate the Big Ten. Is that good for the league, or is two dominant, and then some other ones? You can make a case for a lot of different ways. It's a very interesting question. What's the best way to have your conference exist? And because SEC fans are going to say, well, we got 12 teams into bowl games last year. We only had 2 bad teams, and those teams were 5 and 7. You know, like, you could argue that too. And then the other guy comes back and goes, well, but the Big Ten had the best teams at the top. And then the ACC goes, well, we were the best in the middle, and we won the title. So, like, you can argue it a million different ways. I think what's ideal for your league is a very interesting question that doesn't really have an answer.
But and that's part of why I simply hate the argument of which conference is better for all intents and purposes. But through the conversation of that, you made a great point. The College Football Playoff Committee has got to be shaking in the boots, because I think you're absolutely right that for the next several years there are 3 teams on one side of the conference that are all going to be very, very good, and it's going to create an endless – well, this one beat
in the
this
Big
one.
Ten.
In the Big Ten, yeah. Right. It's going to create an endless – Ohio State beat Michigan, but Michigan beat Penn State, but then Penn State beat Ohio State, and which one's better? That conversation of, but this team deserved to win because of this – I think it's just starting. You've got 3 coaches that are going to be there for a very long time, and until they expand the playoffs, I don't think that's going anywhere. Speaking of things that aren't going anywhere, conversations about quarterbacks aren't going anywhere. Pro Football Focus came out with a foundation draft, and if you're not familiar, basically they came in and said, if you could pick one player today, right now, at this point in his career, and build an entire foundation around him, what order would those players go in? I'll tell you this, Marcus Mariota was behind a couple of names that you probably will be surprised by, and ahead of a couple of names you'll be surprised by. We'll tell you about it. We'll do that next. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game.